The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 2, text number 14, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on April 9th, 2007, in Dortmund, Germany.
So, tonight we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 2, text number 14.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Matrishparshashtukanteyashitoshnasukadukada Agamapa yano yityakshtangshtatikshashvabharata.
O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O scion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Purport. In the proper discharge of duty, one has to learn to tolerate non-permanent appearances and disappearances of happiness and distress. According to Vedic injunction, one has to take his bath early in the morning, even during the month of Magh, January, February. It's very cold at that time, but in spite of that, a man who abides by the religious principles does not hesitate to take his bath. Similarly, a woman does not hesitate to cook in the kitchen in the months of May and June, the hottest part of the summer season. One has to execute his duty in spite of climatic inconveniences. Similarly, although one has to fight with some friend or relative, one should not deviate from his prescribed duty. One has to follow the prescribed rules and regulations of religious principles in order to rise up to the platform of knowledge, because by knowledge and devotion only can one liberate himself from the clutches of Maya illusion. The two different names of address given to Arjuna are also significant. To address him as Kaunteya signifies his great blood relations from his mother's side, and to address him as Bharata signifies his greatness from his father's side. From both sides, he is supposed to have great heritage. A great heritage brings responsibility in the matter of proper discharge of duties, and therefore he cannot avoid fighting. So, this is very nice principle, how to be transcendental to material nature. This material nature is always up and down. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. Sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're distressed. We experience so many varieties of dualities in this material existence. How does one cope with that without being disturbed? You see, this is called the science of Krishna consciousness. Consider the ocean. There's so many waves in the ocean. Up and down, up and down. Consider if there's a hurricane going on. Then the waves are very intense, huge waves. If one goes deep within the ocean, the deeper one goes, the less one feels the effect of the waves, isn't it? And if you go deep enough within that ocean, then there's no more effect of the wave. So, Krishna consciousness means to go deep within the ocean. That is Krishna consciousness. Actually, there is only one energy. That is God's energy. When you're on the surface, that is called the material energy. When you're deep within, that is called the spiritual energy. Sometimes it is described, the material energy is called the external energy. And the spiritual energy is called the internal energy. So in that terminology, one has to internalize one's consciousness. Presently, our consciousness is externalized, you see. And we're feeling the buffeting. We're being buffeted by the waves of the material nature, like anything. Sometimes we're young and healthy, sometimes we're old and diseased, you see. Constantly being tossed this way and that way. Instead of trying to derive happiness from the happiness of material existence, you see, that's a mistake, actually. If we base our happiness on material happiness, guess what we're setting ourselves up for? Material distress. Because material happiness is temporary, it will not last. It cannot last. The nature of material happiness, it is temporary. So if we base our happiness on material happiness, then we are sure and certain to be very, very disappointed in the future. So therefore, in the Vedic culture, from the very young age of 5 years, one is trained how to see everything. Actually, even before 5 years, the parents would train. The guru, the boy would go to the ashram of the guru at the age of 5. But actually, from the very beginning, the young children are trained by the parents, even within the womb. Sometimes they receive knowledge within the womb also. The very beginning, one learns how to situate oneself transcendentally. How to derive that happiness, you see, which is eternal. Nowadays, the modern scientists want us to believe that spirituality is merely some dying superstition. But what have they offered us to replace it with that makes more sense, you see? They say that spirituality is dogmatic, but that means they haven't studied the Vedas. That's all. Judeo-Christian tradition can be dogmatic. But if you study the Vedic wisdom, you'll see this is not at all dogmatic. It's very, very scientific. It's much more scientific than what they call science nowadays, actually. Much better grounded. Modern day scientists will say, well, life really has no meaning. It's just whatever meaning you want to give to it. But is that logical? Why would someone be even inclined to give it meaning if it had no meaning? This is common sense. Why would you even be interested in giving something meaning if it was meaningless by nature? That would be artificial. You see? So the fact that we are inclined to give meaning to our existence, that indicates it has meaning, actually. is like, do you not thirst after, do you not have something called thirst? You see, we are thirsty for water. Why? Because water exists. So we are thirsty for meaning and purpose in our existence, because meaning and purpose actually exist. You simply have to find out what is that meaning and purpose, that's all. So, who will give that information? If you receive some manufactured good and you do not know the utility of that manufactured good, for what purpose it has been manufactured, how will you find out? You go to the manufacturer, he will tell you. You can, this object, this item is meant to be utilized in this way. This is the meaning of its existence. So the manufacturer can tell. So if we want to know the actual meaning of existence, we simply have to find out what is the source of existence, that's all. And there we can find out the meaning. So this is actually a very scientific process of knowing things precisely as they are, not speculating, but actually realizing, awakening the dormant, enlightened consciousness within the heart, and realizing who we actually are, beyond the flickering material nature, the up and down, quivering material nature, you see. This knowledge is very wonderful. This is called Bhagavad Gita. This knowledge, it is described by Krishna himself in the 9th chapter. He says, Raja Vidya, Raja Ghuyam, Pavitram Idamuttamam, Prachakshavagamam Dharmyam, Shushukam Gatamam Yam. This knowledge is the king of education. It's the most secret of all secrets. It's the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. It is the perfection of religion. It's everlasting. And a nice fringe benefit. It's joyfully performed. Susukam. You don't lose anything when you come to the transcendental platform. You gain everything. In the material world, we have sukha, Sanskrit word, which is material happiness. Sukha and dukkha, happiness and distress. On the spiritual platform, we have what is called susukha. You see, su makes it more emphatic. Very happy. So the spiritual platform is a platform of intense, wonderful, thrilling pleasure at every minute. That is the spiritual platform. So we trade in some material happiness and we get instead much greater happiness. We trade in 1 euro's worth of happiness and we get back 1 trillion euros worth of happiness. It's a pretty good deal. You see? We give up activities which activities do we give up? Those activities that are not in harmony with our actual nature. That's all. If we engage in attitudes, types of speech and types of activities which are not in harmony with our actual nature, then what that does is it pulls us away from our actual nature. It brings us back into an illusory concept of the self as being a gross lump of, you know, matter. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, or we can say, you know, stool, urine, mucus, blood and bones. You see, if we engage in activities which are not in harmony with our actual nature, then we're pulled away into that illusory self, you see, which is full of ignorance, full of misery, and temporary. So the intelligent person finds out how to harmonize his every thought or her, every thought, word, and deed with the actual nature of existence, the source of existence. And that way becomes very, very happy. You may say, well, you know, it sounds okay, but is this, are you just hyping us here, or what's going on? No, I'm not presenting something of my own invention. We are simply presenting what is given in Bhagavad Gita. That's all. The bona fide spiritual master never invents something. Those who invent, they may become advertised as guru, but they are charlatan actually. The bona fide spiritual master never invents some new philosophy. He simply repeats what is given by Krishna. That's all. This philosophy is time-tested. It has been followed for millions of years. Even before Arjuna heard the Bhagavad Gita, it was spoken millions of years before that to the sun god. Even before Lord Ram appeared 2 million years ago, this knowledge had been spoken to the sun god. So this goes way, way back. This is actually timeless knowledge. It's eternal knowledge. So this knowledge does work. Anybody who follows the instructions given in Bhagavad Gita will, you know, under proper guidance and direction, will actually achieve the result. We absolutely guarantee it. If you try to concoct your own following of the Bhagavad Gita, then you may have some difficulty. But if you actually follow the prescribed system given in the Bhagavad Gita, if you follow the directions given by Krishna, precisely, you will get the result. Guaranteed. Anyone. Doesn't matter what your background is, what your nationality, your sex, your educational level, literate, illiterate, PhD, it doesn't matter. Anyone who will actually take these instructions of Krishna and seriously apply them will get this result. They will awaken their dormant, enlightened consciousness. They will become free from that identification with the material body, which is temporary, full of ignorance and misery. And they will fully establish themselves in their eternal spiritual identity, which is full of bliss and full of knowledge. Arjuna did it, and we can also do it. We simply have to do what Arjuna did and agree to hear. That's all. We have to agree to submissively hear the words of Krishna. And by doing that, those words will actually act to purify our consciousness, to reawaken our memory of who we actually are. We've forgotten it, but actually we're all the eternal servants of Krishna. We've forgotten it. We were thinking, I'm this, I'm that. But actually, that's just the false ego. The real ego, jivera svarupa hai, krishnera nishadas. We simply have to come back to our original identity as servants of Krishna. So this is the sublime science of Krishna consciousness. It is not a sectarian religion. Whether you call it Christ consciousness, Krishna consciousness, Jehovah consciousness, Allah consciousness, same thing. We are not presenting a new religion here in Germany. Do not misunderstand. This is the essence of religion. God has given one religion to love Him, that's all. One religion. The multitude of religions, that is a man-made invention, actually. There's no such thing as different religions. Just as there is no such thing as different suns. You see, there's only one sun. It may have many names. What do you call it in German?
Sonne.
Sonne? Yes. In English we call it the sun. In Spanish it's el sol. In Hindi, it's Surya. So, there are many different names, but the sun is one. So religion is also one, the love God. So a Christian, if he has actually developed love for God, then he's a self-realized person. If a Muslim has actually developed pure love for God, he's a self-realized person. Anyone who has developed pure love for God, whether they call him Allah, Jehovah, Krishna, Rama, Buddha, any bona fide name from scripture, anyone who has developed pure love for God, they are a self-realized soul. And they'll have no fight with other self-realized souls on the basis of some sectarian conception. This sectarianism is a disease of those persons who identify with the material body. It is not the activity of self-realized soul. Self-realized souls are beyond sectarianism. I was raised as a Christian, so people sometimes say, why did you convert? You see. My grandmother said, why didn't you become a Christian minister? Actually, Christian consciousness does not mean to give up being a Christian. It means to become a perfect Christian. If you're a Jew, you become a perfect Jew. If you're a Muslim, you become a perfect Muslim. It's the perfection of every religion. If you're a Hindu, you become a perfect Hindu, you see. Whatever you are, if you take the science of bhakti and you perfect it according to the instructions given in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll become the perfect practitioner of that religion. Perfect, you see. So it is not sectarian. It is the essence of religion. Religion in its pure original form, that is Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga. The yoga, the science of relinking yourself with God through love, you see. That's what it is. So, I'm very happy to see you all nice people have come together to hear and discuss these topmost topics. You are very special people, actually, that you're attracted to this knowledge. You're not ordinary people. So I encourage you to take this inclination you have and now capitalize on it. You have the greatest inclination and interest in these topics. So now pursue it. Understand this is your greatest, this taste you have for these topics. It is your greatest asset, you see. It is greater than any amount of education, any amount of wealth, any amount of health, any amount of fame, any amount of prestige, any amount of power. This inclination you have to hear these topics of Bhagavad Gita, this is the greatest opulence that you can possess, the greatest wealth, the greatest good fortune. So, you invest this tendency in increasing it more and more. Just like a businessman, you see. He has amassed some substantial wealth. So what does he do? He reinvests that. He keeps funneling it back into his business so his business becomes bigger and bigger and more profitable. You see. So take this inclination you have to hear this transcendental knowledge and keep investing it more and more in this activity of awakening the dormant consciousness within. And if you do so, you'll become a fully enlightened spiritual being. That's it then. You'll actually reach a point where you can see God directly, face to face. Premanjana charito bhakti vilochanena. It is stated like that. By anointing the eyes with the salve of love of God, which is actually applied through hearing, submissive hearing. By anointing the eyes with the salve of love of God, then you will see Krishna everywhere. You will see God everywhere. So this process will work for you. If you simply work the process, it will work. That's a thing. So we encourage you all, you've gotten some inclination now, pursue them. Become expert in the science of self-realization. We're prepared to give you all guidance how to become very expert in the science and realize God in full. So I can ask if there's any questions. Yes.
In this verse it is said that one hasn't been disturbed by distress and by happiness.
Yes.
So it's rather easy to not to be distressed in distress, not to be distressed in unhappiness, because one automatically remembers, well, this is karma or whatever. But it's very difficult to stop enjoying when happy.
Yes. Yes, and I remember when I first joined the movement, what is this, being disturbed by happiness? I mean, what is this? You know, I love happiness. How could I be, don't be disturbed by happiness? What does that mean? But then I found out that actually there's two kinds of happiness. There's material happiness and spiritual happiness. Material happiness is when you get all carried away and a good word is elated. You see? It's, you know, like it's a frivolous sort of just being carried away. Being elation is followed by depression. The idea is that you should relish the bliss of Krishna. You should relish in a transcendental way. In other words, you think, oh, wow, you know, this thing happened. I'm really great. I deserve that. That's an example. You allow your false ego to, you know, to become completely, totally inflated when something wonderful happens, when you receive some recognition or some award, and you think, yeah, I really deserve it. I'm great. Wow, I'm really great. That's an example, you see. As soon as you allow yourself to become elated, thinking that you're a big shot, you're gonna get smashed the next minute. And you're going to become depressed. So when some material happiness comes, you should think, well, this is nice, I can use it for Krishna. It's very good, but I shouldn't think that I'm great. I should think the Lord has blessed me out of His kindness. The idea is when material happiness comes, offer it to Krishna, and actually it'll become sweeter and more relishable. When some material happiness comes, offer it mentally to Krishna. Instead of thinking, yeah, who needs God? I'm great. You see. Offer to Krishna. Think the Lord is kindly encouraging me to serve Him. He's given me nice facility. You see. And then, so that's what it means not to be disturbed by happiness. Not to forget who you really are. Not to be distracted by material happiness. Into thinking that you're independent of God now. Now you're great. You know, you just got a bonus at work, and who needs God anymore? I got an extra $2,000 in my bank account. You know.
Is it like thinking that I was the reason?
Huh?
Is it like thinking that I was the reason for this happiness?
Thinking?
That I was the reason for this happiness.
That's one example. There can be many ways of seeing it, but that's certainly one. You become very, if you allow your false ego to become, you know, inflated, and something wonderful happens, and that's definitely an example of being disturbed by material happiness. I'm sure we could, you know, if we spent a lot of time thinking about it, we could think of more examples, but that's one example. I'm sure there's many different ways that you could become disturbed by happiness. So, the key is, as soon as you allow yourself to be carried away by material happiness, you'll be disturbed by material distress. But if you can be equipoised and think, well, happiness or distress, either one can be utilized. Just like a businessman, when the prices go up, what does he do? He sells. When the prices go down, what does he do? He buys. So it doesn't matter what the market is doing. It can be an up market or a down market. A cunning businessman is always moving his business forward. He's always moving it forward. And he's never being defeated by the market. He's always pushing forward his business. So devotee is like that. When there is material happiness, he thinks, oh, this Krishna has blessed me with an opportunity to serve him with enthusiasm. That's very nice. I'm feeling good. You know, my back pain went away, and now I'm feeling good. I got a lot of energy today. And so now let me use that for Krishna. That enthusiasm, that energy I'm feeling now, let me use it for Krishna. Instead of thinking, oh, now I'll go, you know, skateboarding or something. Now I'm just going to go out on what they call on a lark, just a frivolous, you know, sense gratification. Let me use that for Krishna. Some wonderful happiness comes. Let me take that energy, that joy, that joyful energy I'm feeling now, and offer that back to Krishna. Increase my devotional service instead of going off into some sense gratification. In that way, this is another one of those insider secrets. If when something good happens, you offer to Krishna, then he'll give you something more, again, something better and better and better and better. Like the child who manages his allowance well, what does the father do? He increases his allowance. The child who misspends his allowance, what does the father do? He cuts back on the allowance. So when material success comes your way, material happiness comes your way, offer to Krishna, then he'll give you more and more and more and more of that success. But if you don't offer to Krishna, guess what? You'll cut back on it. Cut back, cut back, cut back, cut back, cut back. So that's the key. If you like to be happy, whenever you're happy, offer that joyful energy to Krishna. And you'll get more and more of it. Because you're not thinking it's yours. You're realizing it's a gift from God. You're offering it back to Krishna. You see, that's the key. Mm-hmm.
How does the devotee, businessman, move his business when it's distress? So how he utilizes this?
Well, if devotee, Prabhupada had that experience, he lost his business. His chemical factory burned down. Everything was finished. He thought, well, this is Krishna's indication. I should just preach now. He took it in that way. That's what Prabhupada did.
Sorry, I didn't get it. What did Prabhupada do?
Hmm?
His
chemical factory burned down, so he just decided to do full-time preaching after that. Forget business. I'll just preach. That's in Prabhupada's case, that's what he did. Yeah. You have to... That's why it's important to have a spiritual master, because you can always... You always consult with your spiritual master, your transcendental mentor. You consult with them and see, what should I do now? This is what happened, what should I do? That's what the devotee does. He takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and then conducts everything under the guidance of an enlightened person who can expertly engage him in using everything in such a way that he makes very rapid advancement on the spiritual path. Questions more? Anyone else? So everyone's, yes, go ahead. That's good. No, I'm very happy you're asking questions. You can ask questions the whole evening.
You said that in Bhagavad Gita, that Bhagavad Gita is the essence of every religion. And that every religion goes about loving God. So the question is,
what are the reasons that they love God?
No, what are the reasons to love God?
Oh, what actually? Why should one love God?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's many reasons. Why should a fish be in the water? Because because that's his natural habitat. He can't be satisfied unless he's back in the water. So actually, you cannot be satisfied unless you love God. The highest reason and the purest reason to love God is for the pleasure of God. Because actual love has no strings attached. See, love in its original pure form is completely devoid of any self-interest. You simply care about the pleasure of your beloved. So the actual reason to love Krishna is for his pleasure, for his satisfaction, on the highest level. And one, of course, to encourage one to take up the path of Krishna bhakti, we tell them that, and it's true, I mean, we're not distorting anything, that this is how you'll achieve unlimited happiness. This is how you will achieve your eternal spiritual identity in the spiritual world. This is how you become full of knowledge and full of bliss. But once one advances on this platform, one is no longer interested in what one himself will get out of it. You see? That's why Lord Chaitanya said, Nadanam na janma sundarim kavi chamba jagadisha kamaye. Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhakti rahaita kitoi. I don't want wealth, I don't want women, I don't want followers, I don't even want liberation from birth and death. I just want to serve Krishna, that's all. So that is the highest platform. One simply wants to love God so that God will be satisfied. No other reason. But the fringe benefits of doing that are unlimited. Unlimited. Because when you fully give yourself to Krishna, he will fully give himself to you. And just consider, who is Krishna as he reveals himself in Bhagavad Gita? Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram surhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantam richati. He reveals he is the owner of everything, he is the enjoyer of everything, etc. So, if you fully give yourself to Krishna, that person who owns everything will give himself to you. You see? Do you think you can ever be in want of anything if the person who owns and controls everything is your personal property? You see? Not possible to ever be in want of anything. So the pure devotee, actually, even though he may not even have a bank account, the pure devotee is actually the wealthiest person in the whole world because Krishna, because he has totally sold himself out to Krishna, and that Krishna has totally sold himself out to that pure devotee. And whatever he needs for Krishna's service, it's all provided by the Lord. He doesn't have to worry about money or power or prestige. All he has is his relationship with Krishna, and everything comes. So one who has Krishna has everything. One who knows Krishna knows everything. So therefore, one should focus one's life's energy on developing one's Krishna consciousness. This is intelligent. Anybody else besides him have? Yes.
It's the most secret knowledge, and we are not able to understand what the secret knowledge was.
What is the statement?
What is the secret knowledge? Where it says that Krishna
secret?
Most confidential.
Oh, yes, Raja Goyam. Why is it stated like that?
Yes, and so what is the secret knowledge?
Yes, this knowledge is secret, Bhagavad Gita knowledge. It is called open secret. Why is it described as secret? Because even though it's being openly made available to everyone, because they are covered by the illusory energy, for them it remains secret. This entire book is the topmost secret. Every single verse is part of the secret. This is the secret right here, what you're reading. Because even though it's available for the whole world, how many are taking? See how many people are in Dortmund, how many people have come tonight, how many people that you invited did not even come. You see? Secret means it's open secret. It's open for everyone, but they can't understand it. Because they are covered by the material nature, it remains for them a secret. That's one. So that I'm not the body, that remains a secret. That Krishna is God, that remains a secret. That you can go back to the spiritual world by chanting Hare Krishna, that remains a secret. Hare Krishna mantra, that is also a secret. Even though it's widely known, they don't realize that by chanting it, they will achieve all perfection, all success in life. How many people are chanting every day on Japamala beads in Dortmund? Very small number, you see. Even though we're telling everyone, all over the world, we're telling them, you chant Hare Krishna mantra every day, your life will become successful. How many people are doing? Therefore, a secret. You understand?
The second question is, somewhere it was said that Krishna had Arjuna realize.
Krishna...
And how can someone realize was a confusion that we had, right?
In the next verse, Krishna says that I give you jnana and vijnana.
Yes, yes.
So it's easy to understand how he can give jnana, how he can give knowledge. But how can he give realization, just by speaking?
Yes, he can give both. Krishna is all-powerful. He can give you the theoretical understanding and he can give you practical realization as well. I mean, Krishna can personally reveal himself to you also. You see, Krishna can give you everything. But are you qualified? You see, that's the question. Inasmuch as they've surrendered to me, to that extent I reward them. So how much we are qualified? That's the question. Krishna can reveal everything within a moment. But are we ready? You see, that's the question. Therefore, we have to make ourselves ready, and then we can actually have that full enlightenment, both of jnana and vijnana. Is it? You understand? Questions more?
You have mentioned just a short thing that in the previous times they were able to give transcendental knowledge to children, to small children, like under 5 years old.
So yes, yes. the child is within the womb. The mother should be, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing kirtans. The child within the womb, there should be transmittal vibrations going on out, because those penetrate through the womb. They uplift the consciousness of the child even within the womb. And coming out, they should bring the child to the temple and let the child hear the kirtans even when he's just a little baby crawling around. And when the child is growing up, they should keep the child on their lap when the class is going on. Not think, well, he's just a baby, let him be a baby. No. Put him on your lap. And so as he grows up and develops consciousness, he's already accustomed to sitting and hearing the philosophy. My disciple and my wife, Vishnupriya Mataji, she advised my disciple Abhicharan very nicely in Austin how to do this with his little son. Now the little boy, you know, 3-year-old boy, he's chanting, he'll preach quoting shlokas in Sanskrit. One time, Abhicharan, my disciple, and his son, he came with me on a preaching engagement about, 175 miles away from home. So when we got to the engagement, my disciple was, taking care of me, and his son was kind of neglected a little bit. He was doing Guru Seva. And so, you called up there on the phone, see how they were doing, and then the little 3-year-old boy, he got on the phone with Mataji. And Mataji said, "How's it going?" And he said, he was a little feeling despondent because no, he was being neglected. He said, Matrishparshashtukontaya. Huh? What was the first one? Mamupecha punarjanma dukalayam shashvatam. He quoted a Sanskrit verse about how this material world is a place of misery. And then he said, Matrishparshashtukontaya, that one has to tolerate. He was quoting the Sanskrit. Mataji just asked a little 3-year-old boy, you see. Because he was trained how to sit and not just to crawl around and, you know, that he would be engaged. And every day the father comes, whenever the father comes, he comes often for the morning class also, in the morning. He brings the boy and he teaches the boy to sit and hear. And it works, because if you actually engage these children in hearing this wonderful philosophy, you see, we may think, well, it's, you know, it's not going to be enjoyable for a child to sit and hear this. But no, actually, for a child, everything is enjoyable. He doesn't know this is enjoyable, this is not enjoyable. Actually, what Abhay Charan would do, he would engage like in cutting vegetables for the Sunday feast. So we give a dull knife to the little baby and let him also cut. He's not going to cut himself, but give him a dull knife so he can say, yes, I am also cutting vegetables, you know. All the adults and the little babies in there are also doing it, and I'm part of the crew, you know. He's having great fun. And then as he grows up, you can give him a real knife, you know, when he gets old enough to handle it. And so this little boy now he's 4 years, he's trained up to do everything. When it comes to making up my plate, the boy will say, okay, now make up Gurudev's plate, and then he'll point out, well, you missed this preparation. And the boy, he will take responsibility to wash my plates also. So it's amazing how a little child, because, see, actually, they're very much purified compared to an adult because they haven't committed so much sinful activity. So if you can engage them in devotional service, they can become a very great devotee. You see, don't just think they're not going to be interested. We don't want to let them enjoy their childhood by this is the supreme enjoyment. We have to have faith that this is nothing more enjoyable than Krishna consciousness. If the child is actually engaged in Krishna consciousness, he'll become millions of times more happy than a child who just runs around, you know, chasing balls. You know what I mean? So, anybody else have questions back there? I mean, so many nice people here. Certainly somebody else has questions.
I've got a question. I was always thinking that if you lose the human life form, because you're a very sinful person, murderer, all that, first you go to hell, right? This seems like a hard punishment already. But then I heard that you work yourself up through all the...
I thought we were already in hell in Germany.
Sorry?
I thought we were already in hell.
But then you work yourself up through the evolution of life, through all those different life forms like that. And I always thought about... I imagine like being a tree. So there might be like a lesson inside of it, right? But there are so many different kinds of trees, for example. What is the big difference, right? And I always think like, what is the big thing to learn to work yourself through all those plants? And like, I always think like...
You're burning off sinful reactions of what you're doing, see?
Yeah.
No, but as a human being, if a human being acts against the laws of nature, the laws of God, then he must undergo reaction, penance for all of those activities which were not in harmony with God's laws. So he has to undergo so many births and deaths and so many different types of species just to burn off the karma.
But this is what I always think, like on the one side, you killed some 5 or 10 people like that. But on the other side, you have to suffer for millions of lifetimes. You get eaten alive and all those insects.
Sure.
And, you know. And it seems like the punishment is harder than the actual.
No! You don't realize how sinful you are. I mean, every time you take a tissue paper to blow your nose, it's some tree that had to give up its life for you to do that. You understand? We don't realize how tightly we are bound up in karma chakra, the laws of karma. How tightly we are bound up. That's why you have to engage, if you want to get free, you have to engage everything in Krishna's service, because by doing that, there's no more karma. But otherwise, we're just totally bound up. Just imagine every time you get out on the Autobahn, you know, driving down, cruising along the Autobahn, you know. All those workers who built that highway, you have a karmic debt to pay those workers back. Mm-hmm. Understand? Every worker who laid the cement, where you drove, isn't it? Where you drove your car, you have a karmic debt to that worker. Are you talking with something?
Yes,
what are you saying?
Yeah,
but I speak of the demigods. You know there's a demigod who controls the blinking of your eyelids? I just saw you blink your eyelids twice just now. Mm-hmm. Three times, four times. You're indebted to that debt five times. Every blink of your eye, six.
I don't dare to do it anyway.
For every blink of your eyelids, you have a debt to the demigod who empowers you to do that. 8, 9, 10, 11. I mean, you see what I'm saying? Every time you pass stool, you're indebted to the demigod who empowers you to clear your bowels. I mean, you know, this is serious indebtedness we got here. So the only way out of it is to surrender to Krishna, because he says, if you surrender to me, I clear off all your debts. I wipe out all your debts. You see? But otherwise, we're just hopelessly entangled in karma chakra. We'll never get out. Never. That's why, what is that term? Nitya Bandha. Eternally conditioned. We'll never get out of here. It's like there was a song, there's an old song back in the US when I was a kid called 16 Tons. 16 Tons. And some guy who would every day he would have to shovel 16 tons worth of coal in the coal mine. And then he would never have enough money, so he'd have to borrow money. The coal company had a store for all the coal workers. And they'd have to, take things on credit from the coal store, the company store. So the workers just became more in debt, indebted, indebted, and they never got out. 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older, and you're deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. So, you know, it's like that. We get so much entangled in karmic debt that we can't ever get out. It's impossible. You can never get out of this place. Totally entangled. That's why Krishna consciousness is so vitally important. Because Krishna says, Sarvadaman Puritya Mame Kang Shadalang Raja Ahang Dvang Sarva Papi Vyo Mokshi Yashami Ma Shuchaho. Give up all of their duties, simply surrender to me. I'll deliver you from all of your sinful reactions. Do not fear. So it's a very simple thing. If we surrender to Krishna, then immediately we're released from everything. Millions of lifetimes of karma that we have to. We that would have had to gone through. Unlimited millions, yes.
If Krishna is all knowing and he can see the future, past and present, as well as his pure devotees, then surely they know what everyone's actions will be in the future, past, present, or what their actions have been. So I guess my question is, how that you know that, how can we do anything different than...
Oh, if Krishna already knows what you're going to do, how you can do anything different? Well, Krishna knows when you'll surrender. But just don't think that because Krishna knows that therefore you have no independence. You see, that's a misconception. Krishna First of all, you have to understand Krishna, his potencies are inconceivable. Achintya Shakti in Sanskrit. He acts through his potencies, and those potencies are beyond your conception, how they can act. If you try to apply what you can do, and what you know what you're capable of doing, and try to bring Krishna down to your level, it won't make sense how Krishna could do that, because you're trying to bring him down to the level of what you're able to do. But Krishna is in a totally other dimension. He's in a different league than, you know, you're in the minor leagues, he's in the major league. You know. You can't compete with him. He can actually know what you're going to do and when you're going to do it, and at the same time you have full freedom to do whatever you want. You can surrender or you cannot surrender. Now, as long as you remain in material energy, then it can be absolutely predicted exactly what you're going to do, because you're simply being manipulated by the modes of nature. Anybody who remains within the material nature, an expert astrologer, not the modern day, you know, charlatans, but the bona fide astrologers, could precisely tell exactly what somebody would be doing in the future. That's all under the laws of karma. Actually, it's controlled by the demigods, the predominating deities of the different planets. And they're under the control of the material modes of nature. But one has the freedom at any second to come out of that karma chakra by surrendering to Krishna. That is, some people say, well, when it's my karma to surrender, I will surrender. But no, it doesn't work that way. Surrender is beyond the laws of karma. When you're fortunate to come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, if you take advantage of that association, then immediately you can get released from karma chakra. Spiritual master is handing out passes, you know, to get out of the prison, to get out of karma chakra. Anybody, if you think, wow, that's pretty good, I think I'll take one, and you get out. Spiritual master is handing out free passes. Here, you've been in prison for billions of years. Here's a key to get out. Here, take a key. Get out of this place.
He has a butt there.
Huh?
He has a butt. Did you say butt?
But was that fortunate contact was just planned, or it's just a fortunate contact?
It's called... Yeah, was that destiny?
Again, it comes down to the thing.
Actually, no matter how it, whether it was destiny or it was just sheer mercy, you should take it.
Yeah, okay. That's a great sunset. Yeah, right.
Sometimes it's described that how the cowherd boys, by undergoing heaps of pious activities, they were enabled to enter into the pastimes of Krishna. So you could say, well, by heaps of pious activities, when becomes qualified to come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master because of past pious activities. It could be because of that, or it could just be good fortune. Even though you're completely, totally disqualified, somehow or other, you know, you just happen to be at the right place at the right time. You see? Actually, in this connection, there's a quote from that wealthy fellow, in that Bill Gates. He was a young high school, actually a young college dropout at the time. He happened to get a contract from IBM to write the software for the new IBM PC. And he capitalized on that situation to his advantage.
Yeah.
He just took it and he snowballed it. But he made an observation in this regard. He passed on what he realized to us. He said, if you find yourself at the right place in the right time, take massive action. So, right now you're sitting in a more opportune situation than Bill Gates did when he got the contract from IBM. You understand? You're getting the seed of Krishna Bhakti has been given to you. You see, you've come in contact with Krishna consciousness movement. Bona fide Vaishnavas, bona fide gurus, you've come in contact, you've gotten the opportunity now, you're at the right place, the right time. Now it's up to you. Are you going to sleep on it? Are you going to take massive action? You see? It's your choice. You have the freedom. You have the power to say, oh, I'm just going to go along with the flow along with the material nature as I've been doing it for millions of lifetimes. It's called, in the saying in English, it's called looking a gift horse in the mouth. In other words, you don't take advantage of the opportunity you've gotten. I believe it was Ravana who said, when something is auspicious, do it immediately. Yeah. Something is inauspicious, postpone it. Yeah, if there's something auspicious, so that there's nothing more auspicious than awaken your dormant Krishna consciousness. So therefore, now you're in the right place, the right time, you come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, now you should capitalize on that to the fullest extent. You see?
How can one capitalize?
Yes, by taking the instructions received and executing them with due seriousness. Spiritual master gives specific instructions to the student, and then one should then carry those out. That's all. If you take whatever instructions the spiritual master has given you, and you follow those instructions, then that is how you will capitalize on it. Very simple then. Prabhupada is the classic example. He got the order to spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. He didn't know how he would do it. He couldn't imagine how he could possibly do that, but he realized this is my life and soul, this instruction. He kept meditating in order, looking, how will I do this? How will I do this? How will I do this? And gradually it was revealed to him exactly how he would do it. And he was highly successful in carrying it out. So the key is whatever order you receive from the spiritual master, you take that order as your very life and soul. You always remember that order. Prabhupada even said you should worship that order. And always see how you can successfully execute that order. By doing that, by being unflinching in your meditating and worshiping that order received from the spiritual master, in due course of time, Krishna will enlighten you and empower you so that you can successfully execute that instruction. So that's how you capitalize on it, by taking the order received. Even if you're not able to execute it immediately, you keep meditating on it and worshiping on it and always seeing how you can find the ways and means to make it successful. And never give up that meditation. That's the key. Any other questions? Yeah.
We hear very often. We hear different of different things we could do at the moment of death.
The what?
The moment of death. Different
okay.
Things to do. Sometimes we hear that we should chant the holy names, or we should remember our spiritual master. I've heard. Or sometimes we get.
Why not do both?
Or maybe cannot think of what you want to think because it's such a chaotic situation, you might not be able to, think of what Lord Chaitanya or Radha Krishna or Narasingha, many different, what is like the proper Vaishnava way, or isn't there any, or should we, is it like an individual?
Whatever is, the whole point is to be Krishna conscious at the time of death. So whatever best facilitates your Krishna consciousness, that's what you should do. Simple thing.
So it's individual.
Whatever best facilitates your Krishna consciousness, that's what you should do.
So generally, it's not what one should do, but whatever activities you are doing, that's what will come in. If you are worshipping and serving Radha Krishna very nicely, or Srila Prabhupada, at the time of that, that's the service will come automatically. You don't have to
The point is, prepare yourself now. Because whatever you're absorbing yourself in now, whatever the total, it's described like this. It's like a calculator that has this number plus, this number plus. At the very end, you press the total button, you get the whole thing. So throughout your whole life, you're putting this in, plus, this in, plus, this in, plus. The moment of death, equals. So, whatever you're putting into your consciousness now, you're creating your consciousness at the moment of them. So you're creating right now, your consciousness at the moment of death is determined by what you're putting into your consciousness right now. It's a cumulative effect of what you put into your consciousness throughout your whole life. So one should always, therefore, be diligent to see that my mind is purely engaged in Krishna conscious, is purely Krishna conscious. I'm thinking in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. I must always observe my mind. Is this sort of a thought pleasing to Krishna or not? If it's not, then I got to do something. Because that if I have thoughts which are obviously, to my own observation, are not Krishna conscious, you know, lusty thoughts, greedy thoughts, angry thoughts, you see, then those thoughts could pollute me the final moment and force me to take birth again. So now, while you have the chance, you know, learn how to discipline the mind. So these sort of not Krishna conscious sort of thoughts can be replaced by wonderful Krishna conscious thoughts. It's not that we become mindless. No, we fill up the mind with so much wonderful, enlivening, ecstatic Krishna conscious thoughts that the dirty, nasty, you know, greedy, lusty, angry thoughts don't even have space. When they come to the hotel of our mind, there'll be a big sign, no vacancy. You see? So they have to go to the hotel next door to try to find a room. When Mr. Lust comes knocking on the door wanting to stay in the hotel of your mind, there will be no vacancy. Mr. Greed comes, Mr. Anger comes, you see. Mr. Pride, and all these, all these nasty fellows that like to stay in the hotel of our mind, come, they won't have any place. They'll have to go looking elsewhere for a room. Come next door. So, any other question? Yes.
Krishna consciousness means we should remember Krishna all the time.
Yes.
So, how we should make it possible in our day-to-day life?
Yes. By seeing everything in relation with Krishna.
For example, I am a student.
So yes. So, you have to see your studies in relationship with Krishna.
So, for example, I have a problem. I am solving it. And if I try to think about Krishna, how...
No. You have to... First of all, you have to be able to see the forest and then see the trees, okay? See the big picture first and then come down to the small picture. The big picture is why you're going to school. What's the purpose of even attending the school?
I want to get a good job.
Yes, that's right. So what's the what are you going to do with that job? What's the purpose of the job?
I would make a good life and make money.
You could... I mean, you don't have to go to school to get a job. I mean, you could flip hamburgers at McDonald's, you know, right now, you see. Of course, who would want to do that? But the point is, you're going to the university so you can make a better living. So you can make more money with less stress. Basically, that's why. You're taking the stress now of an education so you can make more money with less stress. And that's fine. So, well, how are you going to spend that money? You're going to spend it on material sense gratification, or you're going to spend every penny in a Krishna conscious way. You see? You have to meditate on, if you want to be a student and be Krishna conscious in your studies, then you have to really seriously be making a vow, an unalterable vow in your own heart, that this, when I do graduate and get situated with a good paying job, I'm not going to be a sense gratifier. You know, I'm really going to use that money in a Krishna conscious way. So how will you do that? You have to practice it now by how you spend your money. You don't waste your money going to cinema, you see. You don't waste your money on frivolous things that are not enhancing your Krishna consciousness. You have to do that now. You have to be a yogi right now. And if you do that, that will fix the big picture. If the big picture is fixed, then Krishna will allow you to remember him on the small level. He'll appear in the middle of that mathematical formula. Krishna will come jumping out of it at you, is it? But you have to offer be serious about offering the fruit of that work to Krishna. Otherwise, he'll never bless you with his darshan in the middle of that mathematical formula, wherever it may be. You have to, only if you're a devotee, truly a devotee, will he reveal himself to you. You can't be Krishna conscious for the sake of enjoying Krishna. Sometimes people want to do it. They say, well, you know, what's wrong? I'm not enjoying my realm. I'm not relishing my japa. And I say, your problem is you're trying to enjoy the holy name. You should be trying to chant for Krishna's pleasure, not your pleasure. Then you will relish the pleasure, you see. We're trying to get pleasure out of Krishna consciousness for ourselves. I mean, that's a good motivation in the beginning because it is the highest pleasure. But as we advance, we have to understand that that's a neophyte mentality which is holding us back from the higher levels where we can all be steadily tasting unlimited nectar. To get to that level, you have to think in terms of pleasing Krishna by the way you chant his names. How can I chant so that Krishna relishes my chanting to the greatest possible extent? How can I engage in my studies in such a way that Krishna is very pleased with me? I want to please him by the way that I'm studying. And the best way to do that, are you chanting 16 rounds every morning?
10.
Well, I advise that you're only, what is that? You're 5/8 of the way there right now. To staying Krishna conscious throughout the day. When you charge your mobile phone battery, you charge it 10/16 of the way or 100%? 100%. Because if you only charge your batteries 10/16, you may have an important phone call late in the day and, hey, your battery goes dead, you know. So if you want to be Krishna conscious while you're doing those mathematical formulas, you've got to charge your battery 16/16 of the way or 100%. If you're only charging your battery 10/16, no wonder you're losing it in the middle of a mathematical formula, is it? You got to chant 16 rounds. If you chant them before sunrise, it's much easier. It's much easier. You can actually just glide through them like it's swimming in an ocean of nectar in the early morning hours. Some people, you know, they get up late and they try to chant them later in the day. It's like trying to put a knife through a frozen stick of butter. But early morning japa, it's like a soft stick of butter. Just goes right through. So is our time running out now? Yes. I knew I saw some signals back there. Something going on. No? All right, so. Anybody who wants to meet with... Yes?
This is one more question.
One more question? All right.
Effect is not so much. That effect comes in
the,
early in the morning. So why is it so? Is it because the sun is not present? Or
actually, astronomical influences are a fact. Different times of the day have different potencies for spiritual enlightenment. There's a whole atmosphere that exists during the time period known as Brahma Muhurta, which begins roughly an hour and a half before sunrise. If you can find out what time the sun rises and get up an hour and a half before it and chant your rounds then, you'll be amazed how easy they are to chant, how sweet the name tastes. You go, wow, this is incredible. I don't want to miss this anymore. Let me go to bed early and get up early. You can get up early, chant your rounds and do some studying. Actually, even studying is better in the morning than at night. Your mind is fresh and alert. You've rested all night. Your brain can really soak in the information and retain it. That's why we study Bhagavatam in the morning too, in the temples. So yeah, instead of staying up late studying, the hours are the same, the amount of hours, Just go to bed early, get up early, chant, and then study. And then you'll be amazed at how your studies, how you become more Krishna conscious, your studies, you start making better grades. It's easier in your studies as well. This late night passion for students, you know, burning the midnight oil type of studies, you know. It's passion, it's rajagun. Become, if you utilize sattva guna for studies, you'll become much, you'll make higher grades, your mind will be peaceful, and you can be Krishna conscious. One last question. There's another one. Do we have any slack here on the time?
We can do some more minutes.
How much slack then?
All adult persons, they don't have to go.
Should we cut it short?
We can do some 5 more minutes.
5 minutes more? All right, that's it. Five. This is strict now. I'm looking at my watch. This will be it. Now, you haven't asked one yet, so.
Yeah. What is needed to become a spiritual master?
What is needed?
Yeah, what is needed?
Yes, one has to become a completely surrendered disciple of his spiritual master. You cannot, or one cannot become a spiritual master on their own strength. That is not possible. The only way that one can become a spiritual master is by being fully, completely surrendered to their spiritual master and being ordered to be a spiritual master by their spiritual master. Simpleton.
One should have all the discipline. One should have all the discipline to follow the spiritual master. One should have all the disciplines to follow the spiritual master, to become a spiritual master.
One has to be fully surrendered to his spiritual master, that's all. Whatever the spiritual master orders, one does. The spiritual master orders you, okay, chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Japa, okay, give up illicit sex, give up meat eating, give up intoxication, give up gambling, okay, rise early in the morning, observe the Mangal Arati, worship the deities, worship Tulsi Devi, worship your spiritual master, become learned in the scriptures, engage your life fully in preaching, only take Krishna Prasadam. The spiritual master gives us so many instructions. So one gradually learns how to become fully absorbed in those activities and fully dedicates himself to engaging others in those activities. In this way, one becomes qualified as a teacher.
Surrender means discipline.
Hmm?
Surrender means the discipline.
Yeah, Prabhupada personally wrote me in one letter, he said, disciple means discipline. So one has to fully discipline himself under their spiritual master. And then actually the disciple, he simply becomes an instrument in the hands of his spiritual master. In other words, his spiritual master acts through him. He becomes simply an instrument in the hands of his spiritual master. That's how one becomes qualified. Not that on one's own, independently, one can become a guru. But becoming a completely sold-out instrument in the hands of one's own guru, who's actually sold-out instrument in the hands of his guru, who's a sold-out instrument in the hands of his guru, going back to the very beginning, to Krishna himself. So Krishna is actually the only, Krishna, in one sense, Krishna is the only real guru. And the others are servants of Krishna who are being utilized by Krishna to perform his work of guru. Because ultimately there's one guru and that's Krishna or God. But that person is completely sold out to the Lord and is being used as an instrument in the hands of the Lord is considered to be as good as God. Because he's completely become an instrument in the hands of God. He only speaks the words of God. He never gives his own independent idea. He doesn't add something, he doesn't subtract something. Whatever God is giving, that he is giving. So he is like the DHL man. You see, he doesn't open the package, he just delivers it as it is. So guru means he's like DHL man. He gives the package as it is without adulteration. He may be perfect, he may not be perfect personally, but what he is giving you, that is perfect. That is guru. So now we'll stop here. You can ask me personally. No, the time is up.
You can ask
me individually.
All right. Well, we quickly offer some ghee lamps to Radha Damodar. We always do that. We've got those ghee lamps.